This is Radio Boston. I'm Carrie Goldberg, in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. 23 student groups at Harvard are condemning a controversial Kennedy School dissertation about race, IQ, and immigration. At issue is the work of Jason Richwine, whose PhD dissertation argues that the IQ of immigrants in America is substantially lower than that of the white native population.
Richwine says there are genetic differences in intelligence between the races, that, quote, low IQ is likely an underlying cause of the Hispanic underclass, and that, quote, new Hispanic immigrants will probably have low IQ children and grandchildren.
He also argues for an immigration policy that would favor high IQ immigrants as a way to help them and America. Richwine co-authored a recent paper for the Heritage Foundation on immigration reform. But when his controversial PhD thesis, which he wrote in 2009, came to light, he stepped down from the conservative think tank.
Now, Kennedy School students are condemning Harvard for approving and publishing the thesis in the first place, calling it racist. The uproar has sparked a debate about academic freedom as well as academic integrity.
So, listeners, what's your view? First of all, do you buy Jason Richwine's conclusions about race, IQ, and immigration? Was Harvard wrong to approve his thesis and publish it? You can join the conversation by calling 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Dr. Jason Richwine. He's author of the thesis IQ and Immigration Policy. And Jason Richwine, thanks for joining us. We're very grateful.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let me start by just quoting one thing from your thesis, and we should say it's 166 pages, so doing it justice may be difficult in the limited time we have, but among the things you say, no one knows whether Hispanics will ever reach IQ parity with whites, but the prediction that the new Hispanic immigrants will have low IQ children and grandchildren is difficult to argue against. There have been a lot of criticisms leveled at your thesis, but chief among them is that Hispanics aren't a race. I mean, a farmer from the Mexican Yucatan, a doctor from Madrid are both considered Hispanic, yet you lump them all together in this research.
That's a criticism I've heard many times. It's typical of a criticism from people who have not read the dissertation, because if you read the dissertation, you'll find that my conclusions do not depend on genetic transmission of IQ differences. What I'm saying with that quote that you mentioned earlier about the prediction about new Hispanic immigrants is simply that based on past experience, we know that Hispanic immigrants have a lower average IQ than U.S.-born whites, and also their children and grandchildren have continued that IQ difference. That's simply based on experience. It does not rely at all on any kind of genetic assumption about how that transmission works.
But why lump so many immigrants into this group, into this definition, Hispanic? I mean, a farmer from the Yucatan, a doctor from Madrid. I mean, they come from very different parts of the world. I don't quite know. I just don't get that.
Well, the dissertation is trying to look at all immigrants, actually, all post-1965 immigrants. And one of the reasons why part of the dissertation looks at Hispanic versus non-Hispanic white differences is that simply because a large number of immigrants are of Hispanic descent. It is a valid category, certainly in terms of sociology, and that lots of different people identify as Hispanic, and it's also very useful in data because you can identify people who are second and third generation Hispanic within your data sets, whereas it's much harder to identify a third generation immigrants in general. So that's why we look at Hispanics as a group. But I want to emphasize very clearly that, number one, there is no racial or ethnic agenda in the dissertation. There is absolutely no suggestion that anyone is superior or inferior to any other groups. And also, I want to emphasize that I do not argue for treating people based on their group membership when it comes to immigration. Mm. I believe very strongly in treating people as individuals, strictly as individuals. So there's no racial agenda here at all.
I'll take you at your word, but clearly a lot of what you've written is disturbing to some people who think that there is an agenda here. But let's just stick to what you've written. I mean, one of the points you make is that you say genetics may be one of the reasons that explains these differences in IQ, and that in itself is controversial. But you base so much on IQ, and I want to ask you about that, because doesn't IQ just measure one kind of intelligence? And isn't it true that in a sense the tests are sort of culturally biased, give huge advantages to people who are from this culture to begin with? So what's the relevance in focusing so much attention on the IQ test?
Well, okay, a couple of issues right there. The first question is, isn't IQ just one of many important things about a person and how it predicts their socioeconomic success? Absolutely, yes. I would never suggest that a person's IQ is somehow defines that person or defines that person's moral worth. I would never suggest something like that. And nevertheless, IQ is something that tends to be very predictive of a person's socioeconomic success, which is one reason why it's among many, many different factors that are important to analyze. It happens to be also one of the things that we can measure fairly easily, whereas things like creativity and drive and so on are harder to measure, although certainly important independent of IQ. Now, the issue of the culture bias in IQ tests, it's important to understand that the sort of layman's understanding of science and mental ability is often very different from the mainstream of psychology itself. There has been a lot of work done on the extent to which IQ tests could be potentially biased against various groups of people within the United States, racial minorities, against women, and so on. It's a very extensive literature, very voluminous, and the conclusion is very clear, and this is something that the American Psychological Association has stated very clearly, which is that IQ tests do measure basically the same thing for all different groups within the United States. Now, for immigrants, there might be an additional issue there because there's language bias and so on. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things I really tried to look at in depth in the dissertation. So I think if you give the dissertation a read, you'll find that I was very, I think, very fair and very complete in how I treated these issues.
All right. Well, I want to be clear. I did read the dissertation for the purposes of doing this interview, so I just want to be clear about that. And I want to remind listeners that there is a link to the dissertation at RadioBoston.org. So you can go there, you can read it, and you can draw your own conclusions and judgments. You write that one of the consequences of the lower than average IQ scores on many immigrants is a lack of socioeconomic integration. And you write that the results of this are more underclass behavior, less social trust, an increase in the proportion of unskilled workers in the American labor market. And you advocate selecting high IQ immigrants as a way to ameliorate these problems in the U.S. while at the same time benefiting smart potential immigrants who lack educational access in their home countries. So this is where, you know, you go from a thesis to drawing, you know, a pretty dramatic policy proposal. How would that work? How would you select high IQ immigrants?
Well, I don't think it's so dramatic, really, when you think about how many other countries structure their immigration policies. So think about Canada and Australia. They have a policy that is very explicit about bringing in highly educated immigrants, which, of course, you know, I think works very well for them, in the sense that they get high-skilled people and they contribute to the economy and so on. But one of the things that they miss out on is the fact that there are lots and lots of very bright people out there who just don't have access to a university education for whatever reason, potentially because they grew up in disadvantaged environments. So what I'm saying is that we would essentially embrace the same principle that Canada and Australia are using, in other words, bringing in high-skilled immigrants, but let's use some IQ testing in order to try to find those people who don't just necessarily have a great educational background, but maybe have the raw ability to be very successful, but just don't have that opportunity yet. So I don't consider that to be a particularly dramatic proposal. I think it's
dramatic in the sense that so do you see, for instance, the Department of you know, American immigration officials as essentially conducting IQ tests on would-be immigrants, people who are applying for immigration status?
Well, you know, again, the way Canada and Australia do it is they have a point system where you fill out forms and you note all your different characteristics and you get a certain score, and if you cross that threshold, then you advance to the next stage. So again, incorporating an IQ test or, you know, whatever you want to call it, a skills test or whatever, into that kind of system would not be especially difficult. And I also want to emphasize that, of course, this would just be one of many factors that goes into an immigration system. Obviously, there are many things we want to consider. I certainly would not advocate using this exclusively. But as an extension of a high-skill immigration system, I think it would be a very workable idea.
Well, Jason Richwine, as you know, when word of your thesis sort of burst into the public debate, a lot of folks at Harvard are really concerned. There's a statement from 23 student organizations at the JFK School, which question the legitimacy of your scholarship, and I just want you to respond to it. And by the way, we did invite them on the show. They respectfully declined our invitation and said ultimately our conversation is with the students, administration, and faculty at Harvard rather than with Mr. Richwine himself. But here's what one of the things they said in the statement. We believe in academic freedom as it is crucial to the functioning of a university. However, we also believe that putting forth claims of racial superiority based on inherent genetic advantage to be on par with those who have used pseudoscience throughout history to justify state-based hate. Such racism cannot and must not be tolerated. You've seen that statement. It's out there. I just would like you to respond to this deep sense of concern among some at Harvard.
Well, first of all, it's inaccurate. There's absolutely no claims at all of superiority or inferiority of groups. I would never claim such a thing. But the more important issue here is that this is an explicit statement in support of censorship. I mean, they have explicitly said that even if the results I have merit, they should still not be allowed. That's what the 23 ethnic student groups said in their letter. It's amazing to me that kind of opposition to academic freedom would be something that Harvard students, of all people, would endorse. I mean, this is the world's leading university, a place where free expression and free inquiry, open debate about issues is supposed to take place, and they are explicitly calling for censorship. It's really very, very shameful, and I would hope that most Harvard students would condemn that kind of behavior.
But you're not taking issue. I mean, the part of the statement that says they're worried about claims of racial superiority based on an inherent genetic advantage, I mean, that's worded perhaps strongly, but you do say, I mean, I'm reading now from your introduction, you conclude that the material environment and genes probably make the greatest contribution to IQ differences. So you're talking about genetic advantages here that some races have over others.
There certainly could be a genetic component to IQ differences among groups, including racial groups, but that says absolutely nothing about superiority or inferiority. I would never use IQ differences to make statements about whether or not a group is superior in some way to another group. It's not even a relevant kind of question to ask. How could a group be superior just because it differs on a certain trait? It's really just not anything that's part of my dissertation.
Jason Richwine, stand by. I want to bring in another voice into the conversation, Diego Von Vacano. He's professor of political science at Texas A&M University. He's author of The Color of Citizenship, Race, Modernity, and Latin American Hispanic Political Thought. He published a piece relatively recently taking issue with some of the conclusions in your thesis. And Diego Von Vacano, thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you and with Dr. Richwine.
So let me just cut right to the central issue. What are you most concerned about when you hear Jason Richwine's arguments here?
The problem for me is mainly theoretical and academic. So I respect Dr. Richwine's intellectual freedom, academic freedom. I think I agree with him that we have to open debate for any kind of possible ideas and theories. My issue really is with the way that this was proposed and the theoretical framework that really is the foundation of this dissertation. In my view, it should not really have been approved even at the proposal level, the prospectus of the dissertation. And there's substantive as well as sort of technical issues with the dissertation itself. As you mentioned, the first question about Hispanic as a category, for me as a scholar of Hispanic identity, race, and ethnicity, and immigration, that's the most troubling issue because Dr. Richwine does make a reference to this idea on page 60 of his dissertation, but it's a very passing reference. He doesn't really unpack the problematic nature of the concept of race. So that's one of the central problems with the work. It really doesn't really address these issues at a full, substantive, and in a way that merits in a dissertation. In addition to that, of course, others have pointed out the technical problems with the linking of genetics and IQ, and even if we grant that the quantitative work and the methods that are used are good, I'm really not sure why the implication really here is that immigration should be restrictive. So again, the major issues for me are the unsophisticated analysis of race, ethnicity, and immigration, especially with the term Hispanic, which, as you said, really implies or includes in it multiple racial categories. And secondly, that the normative conclusion about immigration should be restrictive, because I can imagine that it could actually go the other way if we're a liberal democratic society that treats everybody equally.
Well, let me come back to you, Jason Richwine. Diego von Vacano there made at least a couple of points. Do you want to respond?
Sure. Let me address the Hispanic ethnicity argument again, because I think it's important to understand that we can have a long debate about whether or not there's a genetic sort of basis to what we think of as the Hispanic ethnicity, the extent to which they're European versus American Indian and African and so on. All of that is irrelevant to the points I'm trying to make in the dissertation. I do not need to treat Hispanics as a genetic group, because what I'm talking about in terms of intergenerational transmission is simply based on a past experience. The Hispanics need only be defined very simply as people who identify as Hispanic. That's a sociological group, and that group of people, for whatever reason, environmental or genetic, tends to have, on average, a lower IQ than U.S.-born whites that is persistent for whatever reason across generations. That's the point. So whether or not there's a genetic basis to that particular sociological grouping is just not an important issue.
But Diego von Vacano, it's important to you because this grouping, this Hispanic grouping, is essentially meaningless, right?
Well, I would disagree, first of all, that in a dissertation you don't have to treat it at length. I mean, that's one of the major critiques that I have intellectually. I think you do have to, because it is a complicated, very complex and fraught idea. So if you're going to write a dissertation, you have to really delve into it, especially in the theoretical framework, which is part one of his dissertation. That's where he should have elaborated on what it means to be Hispanic, what is the concept of Hispanic, where it comes from, the distinction between the U.S. Census definition of Hispanic, the historical use of it in relation to Iberia and the Iberian Peninsula, going back to the Roman term of Hispania, and the connection to Latin America. So it doesn't have to be the main thrust of the dissertation, of course, but it has to be present and discussed in the theoretical framework to show that there's a depth in dealing with this issue. So I think that's really important in terms of giving depth to policy analysis, that you simply cannot treat a reified category and simply contrast it with another sort of equally simplistic concept such as white or native white. Mm.
Diego, I want to ask you about a point that Jason Richwine made in response to the concern among these 23 student groups at Harvard, and that is that their concern sort of smack of a kind of repression of free academic inquiry. What's your response to that?
It's a very important point, and I agree with Dr. Richwine here that we should be open to all kinds of ideas. My own dissertation, for example, was critical of mainstream political theory. I think it's important to always keep looking for new ideas and new concepts. But I've read the dissertation pretty closely now, Dr. Richwine's dissertation, and it actually strikes to me as more of a master's thesis than a doctoral dissertation. It's actually not that long. 136 pages is not that long for a dissertation, which is mostly quantitative methods. So if you're going to produce something new and original, you have to have a theoretical background, sort of a basis at the beginning, and to have a defense of your position that is acceptable. So while I agree that we should think about new ideas, we should propose them in a way that's academically defensible, so that if you're going to use these categories, you have to define them clearly and propose critique of alternative visions of the problem. There's very little discussion of alternative positions, really, in the dissertation. So I think it really should not have passed at the prospectus level.
Well, Diego, Jason, stand by, because I want to get at least one or two callers into this conversation. Wendy is calling from Gloucester. Hi, Wendy, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have sat through and I haven't read the dissertation, but from what I hear, it sounds like it's dredging up a lot of old discredited ideas. When I hear that IQ tests would be used, I mean, IQ tests were developed during the eugenics alarm period in this country that really held sway into the 1930s. I wrote my master's thesis.
Wendy, I'm going to ask you if I could, and I'm sorry to do this, just to come to a quick question because we're running out of time, and I want to give Jason Richwine a chance to respond to you.
Okay. I wrote my master's thesis at Harvard Divinity School in 1989 on eugenics and the development of IQ tests, which were used for this very same purpose at Ellis Island and various places to label certain groups of people as potential criminals having low IQ, little to contribute.
All right, so that's a great point. So let me put that to Jason Richwine. There's Wendy talking about, this sounds a lot like eugenics, what you're proposing there, Jason Richwine.
I want to say that IQ tests were not developed as a means of pursuing eugenics. My dissertation has absolutely nothing to do with eugenics, and I think it's really just kind of a bad word that's being tossed out there as a way to kind of shut down the debate. If I could make another point about some of Professor Von Vacano's criticisms, the page-length criticism, I think, is particularly absurd. The more quantitative analysis there is in a dissertation, the fewer pages there's going to be. That's a fairly standard thing. I also understand that his main research interest is in the definition of Hispanic and what that means and what it has traditionally meant. And that's fine, but, you know, he doesn't get to determine what's in my dissertation. And that's something that goes between myself and the committee that I'm in. And I would point out that the committee that I had was a rather respectable group of people, three tenured Harvard professors who somehow did feel that this passed muster with them. And so I think it's important for everyone to understand that the scholarship here is very mainstream and also very acceptable.
Well, like we said, there's a copy of the dissertation at radioboston.org. Listeners can go there. I'm sorry, Diego, we're out of time, so I'm going to have to end this debate and just urge all of you, our listeners, to continue this debate at radioboston.org. Jason Richwine holds a doctorate in public policy from Harvard University, and Diego Von Vacano is professor of political science at Texas A&M University. Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, victims of trauma like the tornadoes in Oklahoma or the bombings in Boston often need therapy. We'll talk about how some canines are helping. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Carrie Goldberg. This is Radio Boston.